Hello, and welcome back to Maplewood Barn Radio Theater. Come on in and sit a while. Relax while we tell you a story. For our first show of the new year, we've chosen a story by Sir Pelham Grenville Wodehouse, KBE, better known as the British humorist P.G. Wodehouse. For more than 70 years, he entertained readers worldwide with his tales of the funny foibles of the English upper class. Today's performance is based on a short story first published in 1919. Our story is called Leave It to Jeeves. Bertie Wooster, a well-to-do fellow, has employed Jeeves as his gentleman's gentleman. Jeeves has turned out to be quite an extraordinary person, so capable, so knowledgeable, in fact, that at times he seems almost omniscient. Our story begins in the sitting room of Bertie's plush New York apartment.
Oh, Jeeves, I forgot to mention that my old friend Corky will be dropping by shortly. He said he had some matter to discuss with me.
Corky, sir?
Yes. Why, I have told you about him, I know.
With all due respect, sir, I was unaware that you had an acquaintance who euphoniously labeled himself Corky.
Yes, Corky, a friend I met through my cousin Gussie. Corky is short for Corcoran. He's one of those starving artists that live in Washington Square.
An artist, sir? Would I know any of his works?
No, I doubt it. He is a portrait painter, but it appears he has never painted any portraits. The thing is a bit tricky, you see. The catch about portrait painting is that you can't start painting portraits until people come along and ask you to, and then they won't come ask you until you've painted a lot first. It is quite a conundrum.
Then how does this starving artist support himself, sir?
Oh, I think he sells a comic picture now and then to the Star. But as I understand it, his principal source of income is from his rich uncle, Alexander Warple, who has made a fortune in the jute business.
Jute, sir? It sounds like the name of a contorted modernistic dance, sir.
Yes, well, I am a bit foggy as to what a jute is. But apparently it is quite popular. Mr. Warple has made an indecent amount of money from his jute empire, and he wants Corky to give up his aspirations of becoming an artist and get involved in the jute business. According to Corky, he is obsessed with jute. He attaches some sort of spiritual importance to it.
It sounds like a profitable enterprise, sir.
But Corky believes his future is as an artist, and survives by squeezing a small quarterly allowance from the old man. But he has to work for that allowance.
His uncle makes him do manual labor for a stipend, sir?
No, no. Corky earns his allowance by listening for hours as the old man goes on about his pet subject, birds. Mr. Warple has written a book called American Birds, and is in the process of writing another, which is to be called More American Birds. When he has finished that, the presumption is that he would begin a third and keep on until the supply of American birds gives out.
Sounds like an innocent enough hobby, sir.
Yes, but his lectures on birds are tedious and boring, according to Corky. The primary difficulty lies in staying awake. Corky doesn't care anything for birds unless they've been broiled. But Corky's allowance is dependent on it, so he drinks a full pot of coffee before every visit. In addition, his uncle apparently feels Corky is a complete imbecile, and any attempt he makes of his own is only further evidence of his innate idiocy. You may feel the same way about me at times. Ah, that must be him now, Jeeves. Please, show him in.
Very good, sir.
Ah, hello, Corky. And who is this beautiful young lady?
Bertie, I want you to meet my fiancée, Miss Singer.
Welcome, Miss Singer. This is my man, Jeeves.
It is a pleasure to make your acquaintance, ma'am. And yours, Mr. Cochran.
Thank you, Jeeves. Well, Corky, how is your uncle? Why, what is the matter, Corky? You look anxious and worried, like a man who has done murder but can't think of where to hide the body.
We're so scared, Mr. Wooster. We were hoping that you might suggest a way of breaking it to him.
I don't see why your uncle should be upset. I'm sure he will see Miss Singer as the ideal wife for you.
You don't know him. Even if he did like Muriel, he wouldn't admit it. That's the sort of pig-headed guy he is. It would be a matter of principle with him to kick up a fuss. All he would consider would be that I had gone and taken an important step without asking his advice, and he would raise Cain automatically. That's the way he is.
You may want to set it up so that he makes Miss Singer's acquaintance without the knowledge that she is your fiancé. Then you can come along, quite innocently to all appearances.
But how can we work it that way?
That is the catch, isn't it? There's only one thing to do.
What's that?
Leave it to Jeeves. Jeeves? Oh, Jeeves?
I'm standing at your elbow, sir.
I wish you wouldn't do that, Jeeves. It startles me every time. You move around like a disembodied specter that materializes just before being summoned.
My apologies, sir. You rang?
Yes, Jeeves. We want your advice.
Very good, sir.
Let me tell you about Corky's situation.
At the risk of being presumptuous, sir, I overheard the entire conversation as I was sorting silverware in the dining room.
So, you know what it amounts to, Jeeves. We want you to suggest some way by which Mr. Warple can make Miss Singer's acquaintance without catching on to the fact that Mr. Corcoran already knows her. Understand?
Perfectly, sir.
Well, try to think of something.
I have thought of something, sir.
You have?
The scheme I would suggest cannot fail, but it has what may seem a drawback, sir, in that it requires a certain financial outlay.
Here, let me translate, Corky. He means that he has got the glimmerings of an idea, but it's going to cost a bit.
Oh, well, that may not work.
Now, don't. You can count on me to put up the money, Corky. Only too glad. Carry on, Jeeves.
I would suggest, sir, that Mr. Corcoran take advantage of Mr. Warple's attachment to ornithology.
And how are we to do that, Jeeves?
The young lady could write a small volume to be entitled, let us say, The Children's Book of American Birds, and dedicated to Mr. Warple. A limited edition could be published at your expense, sir, and a great deal of the book would, of course, be given over to eulogistic remarks concerning Mr. Warple's own larger treatise on the same subject. I recommend that you dispatch a presentation copy to Mr. Warple immediately on publication, accompanied by a letter in which the young lady asks to be allowed to make the acquaintance of one to whom she owes so much. This would, I fancy, produce the desired result, but, as I say, the expense involved would be considerable.
Jeeves, that is absolutely brilliant. One of your best efforts. I knew you would not let us down.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, but I'm sure I couldn't write a book about anything. I can't even write good letters.
Muriel's talents lie more in the direction of the dance, Bertie. I didn't mention it before, but one of our reasons for being a trifle nervous about how Alexander will receive the news is that Muriel is in the course of that show Choose Your Exit at the Manhattan Theater. It's absurdly unreasonable, but we both feel that that fact might increase Uncle Alexander's natural tendency to dismiss any idea that does not come from him.
I fancy it would be a simple matter, sir, to find some impecunious author who would be glad to do the actual composition of the volume for a small fee. It is only necessary that the young lady's name should appear on the title page.
That's true. Sam Patterson would do it for $100. He writes 10,000-word serials for one of the all-fiction magazines under different names every month. A little thing like this would be nothing to him. I'll contact him right away.
Fine.
Will that be all, sir? Very good, sir. Thank you, sir.
A few weeks later, the first copies of the Children's Book of American Birds were delivered. Corky and Miss Singer were summoned to examine the first editions.
It was certainly some book, with a red cover with the fowl of some species on it.
Yes, and Miss Singer's name underneath in gold letters. Perfect. Here, let's see what it says. This is page 21. Often of a spring morning, as you wander through the fields, you will hear the sweet-toned, carelessly flowing warble of the purple finch linnet. When you are older, you must read all about him in Mr. Alexander Warple's wonderful book, American Birds. There we go, an endorsement of the uncle right away. And here, only a few pages later, he is mentioned again in connection with the yellow-billed cuckoo. This is great stuff. Isn't Jeeves a genius for putting the whole thing in motion?
Yes, quite a bright fellow. This is an absolute cinch, wouldn't you say?
I don't see how it could go wrong.
A few days later, Corky meandered up the avenue to tell Bertie that all was well.
My uncle wrote Muriel a letter so dripping with the milk of human kindness that if I hadn't known Mr. Whipple's handwriting, I would have refused to believe he wrote it. He said any time it suited Muriel to call, he would be delighted to see her.
Ah, success. But of course we all know it can't be as simple as all that. Before we get back to our story, here's a reminder about a Maplewood Barn project.
Before we continue with our story, let's take a moment to tell you about a way that you can help us at Maplewood Barn. Have you or a member of your family ever attended one of the shows or acted or helped out with a Maplewood performance? Well, we're researching a book about the Maplewood Barn community players to be published in a celebration of our new home and our 40th anniversary season. It will contain a lot of photos of past shows, costumes, and programs. Unfortunately, we lost a lot of our archives in the fire that destroyed the original historic barn a couple of years ago. If you have any memories or materials to share, we'd like your help. For details, check out our website. It's maplewoodbarn.com. And now, back to our story.
Shortly after this, Bertie had to go out of town. He had accepted several invitations to sport lodges and health spas, and it was almost a year before he arrived back in the city. The first evening after his return, he popped into a quiet restaurant for a relaxing meal. And who did he find there but Muriel Singer, sitting by herself at a table near the door.
Well, 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 look who we have here.
Why, Mr. Wooster, how do you do?
Is Corky around?
I beg your pardon?
You're waiting for Corky, aren't you?
Oh, I didn't understand. No, no, I'm not waiting for him.
Oh, no, you haven't had a row with Corky, have you?
A row?
A spat, you know, little misunderstanding, faults on both sides, all that sort of thing.
Why, whatever makes you think that?
Oh, well, I thought you usually dined with him before you went to the theater.
I've left the stage now.
I had no idea. I've been away longer than I realized. Oh, why, of course, I see now you're married.
Yes.
That is marvelous. I wish you all kinds of happiness.
Thank you so much. Oh, Alexander, I wondered what was keeping you. This is a friend of mine, Mr. Wooster. I want you to meet my husband, Mr. Wooster. Mr. Wooster is a friend of Bruce's, Alexander.
Glad to meet you, Mr. Wooster. So, you know my nephew. I wish you would try to knock a little sense into him and make him quit this painting foolishness. But I have an idea. He is steadying down. I noticed it first that night he came to dinner with us, my dear, when I was introduced to you. He seemed altogether quieter and more serious, seemed to have sobered him. Perhaps you will give us the pleasure of your company at dinner tonight, Mr. Wooster, or have you dined?
Yes, I have already eaten, thank you. Now, if you'll excuse me, I must be getting home. Good night.
Back in the apartment, Bertie called immediately for Jeeves.
Jeeves, now is the time for all good men to come to the aid of their friends. First, fix me a stiff drink, and you might want to get one for yourself, too.
Later on, perhaps. Thank you, sir.
All right, please yourself, but you're going to get a shock. You remember my friend, Mr. Corcoran?
Yes, sir.
And the girl who was to slide gracefully into his uncle's esteem by writing the book on birds?
Perfectly, sir.
Well, she slid, all right. She married the uncle.
That has always been a development to be feared, sir.
You don't mean to tell me that you were expecting it?
It crossed my mind as a possibility.
Did it, by heavens? Well, I think you might have warned us.
I did not want to take the liberty.
Oh, now, who could that be?
I'll go see, sir. It is Mr. Corcoran, sir.
Ah, Bertie, it's so good to see you. I heard you had just arrived back in town.
Yes, I was just thinking of looking you up.
Oh, Bertie, the most awful things have happened since you left.
Ah, yes, I know. I had the unfortunate experience of running into Miss Singer, Mrs. Warple, in a restaurant this evening. But the good news is, I got to meet your uncle for the first time.
Good news? Why, there is no good news. It gets worse. She has borne his child, and he has hired me to paint a portrait of the baby. Such irony! This is my first commission, and the subject is a baby that has robbed me of my inheritance. I spend my afternoons gazing into the ugly face of a little brat who has swiped all I might possessed. I can't refuse to paint the portrait because if I did, my uncle would stop my allowance. Yet every time I look up and catch that kid's vacant eye, I suffer agonies.
It sounds like a very difficult situation. I wish I could help.
The fact is, you can help.
Oh, what can I do?
Well, I finished the portrait this afternoon, and tomorrow my uncle is coming over to view it.
How can I help that?
The fact is, Bertie, it doesn't quite look right to me. Would you mind coming over to look at it and tell me what you think? I don't know, I kind of feel like I need your moral support.
You think your uncle may not like the portrait?
He may not.
I'll come.
Oh, thank heaven.
But only if I may bring Jeeves.
Why Jeeves? What's Jeeves got to do with it? Jeeves is the fool who suggested this scheme in the first place.
Listen, Corky, if you think I am going to face that uncle of yours without Jeeves' support, you're mistaken. I'd sooner go into a den of wild beasts and bite a lion on the back of the neck.
Oh, all right.
Oh, Jeeves! Jeeves!
Standing at your elbow, sir.
Damn it, I wish you wouldn't do that. Corky has a portrait he wants us to look at tomorrow, and he fears
I heard every word, sir.
Then we will see Corky at his studio tomorrow.
Very good, sir.
The next day, Bertie and Jeeves arrive at the studio.
Stand right where you are, Bertie. Now, tell me honestly, how does it strike you?
Here, let me move a bit closer. No, that doesn't help. Let me go back to where I was.
Well?
Of course, I've never seen the child, but I have seen many ugly babies before.
As ugly as that?
I don't see how they could have been.
You're quite right, Bertie. Something's wrong with the darn thing. My private impression is that, without knowing, I've painted the soul of the sitter. I've gone right through the mere outward appearance, and I put the child's soul on canvas.
But could a child of that age have a soul like that? I don't see how he could have managed it in that time. What do you think, Jeeves?
I doubt it, sir.
It sort of leers at you, doesn't it?
You've noticed that, too?
I don't see how one could help noticing.
All I tried to do was give the little brute a cheerful expression, but as it worked out, he looks positively dissipated.
That's just what I was thinking. He looks as if he were in the middle of a drunken spree and enjoying every minute of it. Don't you think so, Jeeves?
He has a decidedly inebriated air, sir.
Ah, here is Uncle now. Hello, Uncle Alexander.
Hello, my boy. And hello to you, Mr.
Wooster. And this is my man, Jeeves. Jeeves? Well, he has disappeared into the woodwork, as he tends to do.
Well, Bruce, my boy, so the portrait is really finished, is it? Really finished? Well, bring it out. Let's have a look at it. This will be a wonderful surprise for your aunt. Where is it? Let's... Ugh. Is this some sort of practical joke?
You'll want to stand a bit farther away from it.
You're perfectly right. I want to stand as far away from it that I can't see that thing with a telescope. And this is what you've been wasting your time and my money for all these years? A painter? I wouldn't let you pay my bathroom. I gave you a commission thinking that you were a competent worker, and this extract from the comic papers is the result? This ends it. If you wish to continue this pretense of being an artist because you want an excuse for idleness, please yourself. But let me tell you this, unless you report at my office on Monday morning prepared to abandon all this idiocy and start at the bottom of the business and work your way up as you should have done half a dozen years ago, Not another cent! Not another cent! Not one more bush!
Corky?
Well, that finishes it.
What are you going to do?
Do? What can I do? I can't stick on here if he cuts off supplies. You heard what he said. I shall have to go to the office on Monday.
Oh, this is a calamity.
If I might make a suggestion, sir.
Yes, Jeeves, anything.
I wonder if I have ever happened to mention to you, sir, Mr. Digby Thistleton, with whom I was once employed. It was a favorite saying of his that there is always a way. The first time I heard him use the expression was after the failure of a patent depilatory, which he promoted designed to remove leg hair.
Jeeves, what on earth are you talking about?
I mentioned Mr. Thistleton, sir, because his was in some respects a parallel case to the present one. His depilatory failed, but he did not despair. He put it on the market again under the name of Hair-O. Guaranteed to produce a full crop of hair in a few months. It was advertised, if you remember, sir, by a humorous picture of a hairy billiard ball, and he made a substantial fortune. It seems to me that Mr. Corcoran looks at the matter in the same light as Mr. Thistleton. He will find there is always a way. Mr. Warple himself suggested the solution. In the heat of the moment, he compared the portrait to an extract from the comic section of a newspaper. I consider the suggestion a very valuable one, sir. Mr. Corcoran's portrait may not have pleased Mr. Warple as a likeness to his only child, but I have no doubt that editors would gladly consider it as a foundation for a series of humorous drawings. If Mr. Corcoran will allow me to make the suggestion, his talent has always been for the humorous. There is something about this picture, something bold and vigorous, which arrests the attention. I feel sure it would be highly popular.
He's right! The man's absolutely right! Jeeves, you're a lifesaver. You've hit on the greatest idea of the age. Report at the office on Monday. Start at the bottom of the business. I'll buy the business if I feel like it. I know the man who runs the comics section of the Sunday Star. He'll eat this up. He was telling me only the other day how hard it was to get a good new comic. He'll give me anything I ask for a real winner like this. I've got a gold mine. Where's my hat? I've got an income for life. Where's that confounded hat? Lend me a fiver, Bertie. I want to take a taxi down to Park Row.
If I might make the suggestion, Mr. Corcoran, for a title of the series which you have in mind, The Adventures of Baby Blobs.
Why, yes, Jeeves, that's perfect. The Baby Blobs. Oh, thank you. Thank you, Jeeves.
A few weeks later, back at the apartment, Bertie is just finishing the comic section of the Sunday Star.
Jeeves, I'm an optimist. I always have been. The older I get, the more I agree with Shakespeare and those other poets about how it's always being darkest before the dawn, and there's always a silver lining. Look at Mr. Corcoran, for instance. There was a fellow, one would have said, clear up to the eyebrows in the muck. Yet look at him now. Have you seen these pictures?
I took the liberty of glancing at them before bringing them to you, sir. Extremely diverting.
They've made a big hit, you know.
I anticipated it, sir.
You know, Jeeves, you're a genius. You ought to be drawing a commission on these things.
I have nothing to complain of in that respect, sir. Mr. Corcoran has been most generous. I am putting out the brown suit, sir.
No, I think I'll wear the blue with the faint red stripe.
Not the blue with the faint red stripe, sir.
But I rather fancy myself in it.
With all due admiration for your taste in clothing, sir, it makes you look like a circus huckster.
Oh, all right. Have it your way.
Very good, sir. Thank you, sir.
You know, Jeeves, it is a lot like being henpecked. But then, you are always right. I've got to keep that in mind.
And so Jeeves rescues the day with his illuminating intelligence, his soaring deductive skills, and his sage advice.
We thought some additional material about P.G. Wodehouse might be of interest to you. The stories of P.G. Wodehouse have brought joy to countless people over the years. Kaiser Wilhelm, shortly after Germany lost World War I, read Wodehouse to his staff. The top comedian in Burma, Zargana, who was imprisoned over his stand-up routines, was consoled by reading Wodehouse during solitary confinement. There is hope to be found in the stories of P.G. Wodehouse, as well as merriment. Yet his childhood was not a happy one. Born in 1881, he was virtually abandoned by his parents when his father took a post in the British government, serving in Hong Kong. He and his siblings were shuffled from one relative to another, and Wodehouse went without parental direction or affection for the first 16 years of his life. There is an undertone of sadness in his early life, as he and his brothers were passed from aunt to aunt, like unwanted Christmas gifts. Throughout his extraordinary life, though, he managed to maintain an air of normalcy. He was a self-made man, married a chorus girl, endured time in a Nazi prison, and was accused in his homeland of writing treasonous material. Yet he cloaked himself in equanimity, much as Bertie covered himself with heliotrope pajamas. He consistently deflected emotion, both good and bad, away from himself. As one critic in Punch magazine noted, his stories were like taking a spade to a soufflé. The writings of Wodehouse preserve a world of innocence and wonderment, a certain purity he never seemed to grow out of, while living in a world of cynicism and violence, which he never allowed himself to grow into.
Before we continue with our story, let's take a moment to tell you about a way that you can help us at Maplewood Barn. Have you or a member of your family ever attended one of the shows or acted or helped out with a Maplewood performance? Well, we're researching a book about the Maplewood Barn community players to be published in a celebration of our new home and our 40th anniversary season. It will contain a lot of photos of past shows, costumes, and programs. Unfortunately, we lost a lot of our archives in the fire that destroyed the original historic barn a couple of years ago. If you have any memories or materials to share, we'd like your help. For details, check out our website. It's maplewoodbarn.com. And now, back to our story.
We hope you have enjoyed this presentation of the P.G. Wodehouse story, Leave It to Jeeves, adapted for radio by Brad Buchanan. The show was produced by Darren Helwich. Our players were Jeff Martin as Bertie, Byron Scott as Jeeves, Maggie Henson as Muriel, and Terry Yates as Corky, with a special appearance by Darren Helwich as Alexander. This is your narrator, Brad Buchanan, hoping you'll join us at the same time next week for Maplewood Barn Radio Theater, right here on KBIA.